Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday afternoon / evening. All of us out here in the West Coast region, we've got from the Seattle area, still licking his wounds from University of Washington's loss to Michigan on Monday night, is the machine Kevin Pelton.
You know, glad to, not like happy to have been there because they had a legit shot to win it, but that's not going to tarnish an amazing season for UW.
Absolutely. And you know, obviously, I'm an Ohio State fan. I am a realist, and I also recognize greatness. And no matter what anybody wants to say, Michigan ran an extremely impressive gauntlet against the best teams, and they won all those games fair and square. No matter what anybody wants to say, they won it playing old-fashioned football, and you got to respect it, and they earned that championship. So, and as far as any alleged recruiting violations, there is no rules in recruiting anymore. So I don't care about that. And any alleged stuff that they had on tape or whatever, none of it matters because the games they had to win, they won them all and won them all relatively comfortably. Well, not comfortably, but they won them fair and square. Maybe you don't think so with the holding calls, Pelton, but whatever, we won't get into that. We'll talk about the NBA. Joining us from Oakland, where he's just crossed the bay from seeing the Warriors in San Francisco, is Anscapes. Mark J. Spears, our Hall of Famer. What's going on, Spears?
And, you know, LSU had the Heisman Trophy winner again.
Questionable decision after seeing Penix.
He was awful yesterday.
Well, but he was pretty damn good in the semifinal.
Hey, man, it's about what you did in the regular season.
There were, like, so many UW fans saying after the semifinal, like, well, don't they hold the voting after the playoffs?
Well, they had it like, after the championship game.
I don't think Penix is winning anything.
That doesn't mean he's not nice. He had a phenomenal season, so don't let me take it from that. Yeah. But Heisman Trophy was in Baton Rouge. And we got bags, and we'll spend them. Y'all want to come to LSU? We'll pay you.
That's right. Same goes for Ohio State, by the way. All right, welcome to the Big Ten, Pelton. Spears, you spent today at Warriors practice where Draymond Green spoke to the media for the first time since his suspension ended. I'm just going to hand the floor over to you and tell us what he said and what that situation was like there.
Really, really interesting. He held court for about 30 minutes and just was talking about how, you know, much speaking to somebody about his mental health was certainly helpful for him. And one thing I thought was pretty intriguing was he really took 10 days off, didn't touch a ball. That's not to say that he didn't watch basketball, but he stayed away from it. And when in his meetings that they began talking about returning to the court again, he said he had a jolt, like took a step back as if he's like, oh man, I gotta, like, I wonder if that retirement stuff was real, because, you know, for him to say that, you know, when they mentioned him coming back, that he wasn't excited about it initially, that kind of shows, you know, how stuff was stressing him. And he now, though, seems to be in a good place. He said he's not messing with the referees anymore.
Which... I think Steve Kerr asked him not to mess with the referees anymore.
Yeah, he said that he definitely, you know, it's going to be continue to be a habitual line stepper, but he was going to control himself. And I mean, the proof is seeing it, right? But he definitely was contrite, definitely wasn't pointing the fingers. He sounds like he's ready to get back, but he said it was bigger than him. It's up to Steve Kerr, teammates, the staff, but he also expressed guilt for like what has happened to this team, struggles during the departure that he could have helped with. And so I think if he could play, he would play tomorrow or on Wednesday against the Pelicans. How soon? When's the right date? They're about to go on the road. Do you want to bring them back on the road, or do you want to bring them back in a more sympathetic home crowd? I think it's probably the latter. So my guess is he'll probably come back after this road trip. But there definitely seem to be just a less heavy Draymond Green. Like he does seem like there's been a lift taken off of him, and I'm really curious to see what it's like when he plays his first game and what happens when, you know, he gets pushed a little bit, how he responds. But he certainly said all the right things today.
Yeah, so look, I don't know what's in Draymond's heart and what's in his head. I can't even try. I don't know what's going on in his life off the court. There's a few things that I do know, and one of them is that when it comes to basketball, Draymond's not a victim. So this situation he brought on himself, and you know, some of the tenor of his podcast made it sound like he had suffered something that, like, you know, made him sound like a victim a little bit. And he's not. That's number one. Number two, he has a 4-year, $100 million contract. So yeah. That doesn't mean he couldn't have considered retirement. Absolutely, he could have considered retirement. But
as you know, and I know, he has too many things on the line to do that. Money, right. TNT I mean, job, like just,
you know.
I think it was just emotion, man. I think he just went through a range of emotions.
I respect it. But like he comes out yesterday, announces, you know, his return and the debut of his season of his podcast. And it comes with an announcement of a contract extension for his podcast with Volume. You know, like it kind of undercuts the whole, I was thinking about walking away. When I have my podcast come back with my announcement, and you know he's very savvy. He's one of the savviest players ever when it comes to media. So words don't matter to me here. It's about actions. And what I do think he said that was interesting. He's like, I've done enough damage to this team, and he has. There's a number of reasons why the Warriors in 12th, but he's probably the biggest. Spears,
no question.
He's probably the biggest. And
he's a great player, great defensive player, great leader. IQ gone, no Chris Paul. I mean, and when they have some close losses like they've had over the last couple weeks, perhaps he could have been a difference in those games.
For sure. And their Pelton, their defense, what has it been, 13 games? Their defense has really diminished. I think fallen into the bottom 10 without Draymond. I mean,
don't forget Gary Payton II too.
Well, right. He came back for two games and then went right back out with hamstring. But, you know, defensively, the Warriors are a shell of themselves. I think Steve Kerr has articulated how frustrated he is with the way the game's being called now. But still, they missed the guy defensively, Pelton.
Yeah, first I want to note, there is a clutch playbook for using the retirement possibility to win the media cycle. So Draymond is following that one. But I don't know if he's the biggest reason they're in 12th.
It's another guy who had $100 million left on his contract when he, you know, when he claimed he was going to retire.
I don't know if he's the biggest reason they're in 12th. He's the most preventable reason they're in 12th. Because like some of the other structural flaws, without some dramatic, you know, moves and maybe a trade, are not necessarily going to get better. Or, you know, without Andrew Wiggins rediscovering the way that he played when they won the championship and even into last season, are not getting better. But what Draymond is going to do is, you know, make a lot of these lineups more workable for Steve Kerr, because you mentioned the defensive issues. Kevon Looney has not been the same player this season that he was the last couple of years, where he really developed into this reliable piece of what was last season the best starting lineup in the NBA. They, you know, have played a lot of Trayce Jackson-Davis at center, and he's given them good minutes. Dario Saric at center, but that's, you know, not going to provide the sort of defensive impact. And Draymond is presumably going to come back and play a lot of center, I think, for this team. That opens up, you know, minutes at the four for Jonathan Kuminga, who you guys discussed a lot on the podcast on Monday, his comments about Steve Kerr and, you know, the need to find a role for him going forward. And I don't know, like, they've been okay without Gary Payton II because of the fact that Brandon Podziemski needs to play a lot, even if he's not as good defensively. He's a more complete offensive player than GP2 is. You know, same maybe can be said for Moses Moody, who finally got an opportunity the other night with Chris Paul also out of the lineup. You know, I don't think that, again, Draymond is going to fix everything, but his ability to protect the rim, to switch defensively, the IQ you mentioned at the offensive end of the court, it's just going to make a lot of these other role players, I think, fit better into lineups than they have been the last few weeks.
Spears, it seems to me that the Warriors are having sort of a challenge that's as old as time. Steve Kerr, there's a reason why he wants to play the guys who've been around for a long time, the guys he's won championships with, and like Looney being one of them. You know, Looney doesn't get grouped in with them, but he's, you know, bona fide part of the dynasty. I think he's got three of the four rings he has been a part of.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wants to play Looney. He wants to play, you know, more of the veterans than he does want to play Kuminga, certainly Moses Moody. And, you know, it took him a while to play Podziemski. And obviously, you know, Joe Lacob, the owner, has, you know, he's been on the record of talking about the two timelines, and he was one of the driving forces in drafting Kuminga. And you know, I thought it was interesting. Monty Poole from Beria Sports Group was writing about the night that Kerr didn't play Kuminga the last 18 minutes of the game, that Joe Lacob came to the press conference came to the Steve Kerr press conference, which is very unusual. If an owner wants to hear from a coach, he goes to the coach's office or summons him to his office.
And he could watch it on TV because it's live on television locally.
Right. I don't want to assume what was in Joe Lacob's head, but that was interesting. But, Kerr has been known to maybe not favor the younger players as much. And this is something that happens in the NBA all the time, especially for a coach who's had success with players. They tend to lean towards the more experienced players that they have more of a history and trust with. I'm not saying that there's a match that makes sense for the Warriors where they would be in fifth if they were playing differently. But I do think this is a particularly difficult team to mix and match. And Kerr is, been under some heat and some scrutiny trying to figure that out, even within the organization. So there's even a little bit of uncertainty about how he's going to play when Draymond comes back.
Yeah.
Because of the way they've played when he's out. And they've had some success. They didn't do great, but they've had some success. I don't know which direction the Warriors are going to go. I have been one of these guys who's like, do not bury this team. I would rather be one of the last people off the boat than one of the first. But I do acknowledge that they're facing, a crossroads about which way they're going to play and how this season's going to play out. And Draymond's a big part of that.
Yeah. And also with Draymond, it's uncertain when he'll be back, right? So when is he going to help him? And I don't even know if he knows. But I think they're primed for making a big trade. We didn't mention Wiggins. And I don't know if Pelton has any Wiggins stats handy, but he's a mastermind, so he'll be able to probably do this as I talk. He's had a really disappointing season. It's, whatever was going on respectfully last year, I don't know if it's hanging on with him now. But he's had a really, really disappointing season, and he's been coming off the bench and just doesn't have the same spark offensively. Defensively, you still see some things. But I wonder if the Warriors' patience is thin now with Wiggins. I wouldn't be surprised if they're willing to trade him. What kind of value does he have? Would Masai Ujiri want another Toronto player on his roster? Is that attractive to him? I do think there's still some good basketball left in Andrew Wiggins. I just don't understand, where it is or why it's not there. Where did it go? But I think the Warriors have to acquire a dominant number two scorer. And there are guys available. There is Pascal Siakam. There is, DeRozan and obviously LaVine and, Keldon Johnson, and you hear different names of different guys. Like, there are players available. Markkanen, if that's true,
I'd be surprised if the Jazz have, as we do this podcast, the Jazz had won 9 of 12, and they went to this Eastern Conference road trip, and they lost in Boston, but then they won in Philly and won in Milwaukee. They're doing really well. They had a really tough 10 games here.
I was very confused by them, so it's good to see them playing well again.
I do think the Jazz have indicated to some folks that they will be willing to sell off some players, especially the ones at the end of their contract. I would be very surprised if they would be willing to
trade Markkanen.
Yeah.
It'd also be very amusing if those two teams made a win now trade for Golden State, with Utah now being ahead of the Warriors in the standings.
Yeah. Right, right. Well, I think Utah's eyes are open that they're going to be their year. But Kelly Olynyk is a player who,
they need somebody bigger, Brian.
Bigger than Olynyk?
I really feel like they need a number two.
Oh, you need, they need a bit, like, you don't mean taller. You mean like a bigger name.
They need a scorer. They need a dominant scorer. Like, I really like Siakam. If the Raptors don't have anything great, I know when it came to Fred VanVleet last year and Masai gets beat up about not making a trade, but I don't think he felt like there was really anything. I think he may have had one offer for Fred, from what I hear. But then you can't, it's tough to lose somebody for nothing 2 years in a row, right? So I wonder what's going to be there for Siakam in the end. But like, if you're the Warriors and you got Steph Curry in this window, like Draymond basically said today, Steph Curry's window isn't closing, but it's you can hear it. It's like the latch on it's getting pushed, right? And to me, I might be crazy, but if Kuminga could get you Siakam and you could add Chris Paul, my apologies, Chris's salary to it, or Maybe you get him from Wiggins. I think the Warriors need to do something like that. They can't survive in the rest of the Steve Kerr, I mean Stephen Curry era with another, without another number two scorer. There's just too much put on Steph, too much weight put on him. You see him kind of fatigue at the end of games. They need another horse to ride besides Stephen Curry. So to me, it has to be somebody that's an all-star caliber player that the Warriors sign. I mean, try to acquire. And I think they desperately need to do that. And they have the young players and they have an expiring contract. And, you know, you have Wiggins and like, I think they could make something get done for one of these guys and that they desperately need to. Cause if not, I mean, I don't really, even with Draymond coming back, I don't see it improving dramatically.
Well, I remember having this thought process when LeBron was, you know, near the end in Cleveland. And I was saying, you know, when LeBron leaves, you know, it ended up being in free agency, but, you know, if he retired or whatever, you're not getting another one. Like, that's it. Like, I know that nobody wants, like, you know, a 5-year rebuild or whatever, but, like, he's a non-renewable resource. That's it. He's gone. Once he's gone, especially in a place like Cleveland.
Yes.
And that's what I'd say about the Warriors, which is, you know, Steph is here. The Warriors were in the wilderness for decades before Steph got there.
Repeat that.
Decades.
People in the Bay forget this.
They may head to the wilderness for decades again after he leaves. So
exactly.
You know, if your point is you got to maximize the Steph window, like that's a reasonable point. The question I would have, you know, there's two big things with everyone. Whenever you talk about a trading for a guy in the last year of his contract, like Siakam is, number one, you have to do the whole thing about whether the guy would want to stay there or not.
Yeah.
And there's been some reporting dating back to the summer about Siakam's willingness to, there's only certain places he wants to go. And so if you're not going to be able to keep the guy, what you're going to offer is a factor. You know, if you're offering for a rental, it's,
you know,
factor.
How it goes though. It's the wink, wink,
yes,
thing.
Yes, of course.
You don't make the trade unless he's staying.
It's very clear that OG Anunoby expressed an interest that he would stay in New York. And that's why that trade got done. The other thing though, Pelton, is that, you know, one of the reasons why the Warriors traded for Chris Paul was to dump Jordan Poole's salary. And, you know, Chris Paul doesn't just act as the backup point guard, but he also acts as a you know, salary move, and he acts as an expiring contract. And so I don't know if the Warriors, with a $400 million payroll, I don't know if they're in position to continue to pay at that level by taking a guy whose contract is expiring and trading him for a guy who's got, you know, potentially you're going to have to sign for a huge number, maybe even more money than Chris Paul's making, probably more money than Chris Paul's making. With Wiggins,
like if it's Wiggins, does it make it easier?
Yes, much because easier. you're getting off his salary.
Yeah.
But, you know, you trade Wiggins for Siakam, you know, you're trading out some talent there. I will say this, Pelton, the you know, the trade that the Raptors made for Anunoby, they acquired players that can help them right now. There was no, you know, there's a second round pick in it, but that was a trade that was a restructure trade. That wasn't a rebuild trade. You know, a trade that had Andrew Wiggins and Jonathan Kuminga in it, that would be a restructure trade. So if what Spears is, you know, I have no information at all about.
Oh,
that.
Man, this is me being fantasy GM.
Right.
I just think they need to do something.
Yeah, it's not off the wall, Pelton. It's not off the wall. It's just about whether they would consider that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. If I were Toronto, I would certainly want Chris Paul back in the deal. You mentioned Draymond Green having 4 years, $100 million. Andrew Wiggins' contract is slightly bigger than that. He's just entering the first year of that extension, which, you know, he signed it coming off of that terrific championship run in 21. And you thought, what a great deal for the Warriors. And now the way that he's performed so far in the first year of it, it's looking like it may be tough for Wiggins to play his way into the value. And, you know, at the start of the season, I think there was optimism, as Spears alluded to, that, you know, he was just out of shape. And over time, that would come back. By this point in the season, like that can't be the explanation. Like, you've played.
Yeah, he hasn't been the same player since he left.
Two and a half
year.
Months.
Yeah, that's just the truth. He hasn't been the same player.
And it's like randomly across the board. Like his steal rate is the lowest of his career. His assist rate is way down. It's not just the shooting. It's a whole bunch of different things. And it's particularly worrisome. So if I were Toronto, the package I would want is, you know, I mean, I'd have to look at the exact salary numbers here, but Chris Paul, Kuminga, and Moody. To me, Moody is actually the more valuable of the Warriors, you know, youngish players. Pajemski would be my number one guy I would target, but I don't think the Warriors are giving him up in a deal for Siakam. But Moody has played terrifically this season. He just hasn't been able to get on the court because of the fact that Pajemski isn't so good. And, you know, obviously they're committed to Klay Thompson at shooting guard. But that's the interesting variable, is if you do make this trade for Siakam, what's Klay's next contract going to look like? Because if it's, you know, what he's thinking is a salary, I think the Warriors have to walk away at that point. You just can't justify paying that much if you've added
Siakam. I got to believe that they'll come to terms. I got to believe that. I mean, I guess I shouldn't assume anything, but I have to believe that the two sides can find middle ground.
And you know what was interesting about when people make mention of, well, Klay was offered 248. I wonder if it wasn't so much the money, but maybe the years, right? Like Draymond got 4 years, right?
Right. Yeah.
Klay got offered two.
And Draymond, all 4 years guaranteed for Draymond.
Yeah. And so maybe that might have been more the sticking point for Klay, like, I can't get four, like Draymond got four, you know, two and I'm out, you know. So, but again, and Pelton's on to something, man. Moody's been playing really good basketball. That game in Sacramento when it went in overtime and you know, cost the Warriors an opportunity to stay in the in-season tournament, I thought he was sensational. And, you know, Steve made a decision to take him out. And this kid has been super professional. There's been no bitching there. I don't know how. I don't know why he's been able to, how he's been able to bite his tongue in a way that Kuminga hasn't. But whoever gets him, if he is dealt somewhere, you got a plug and play player that's ready to go. And he's an extremely great kid, professional kid.
You were, speaking of Toronto and Sacramento, you were just there at their game in Sac the other day, Spears. And R.J. Barrett had one of the games of his career. He had 37 or 38 or something. And you wrote
against
a piece
the Warriors,
it was against the Warriors, not Sacramento, sorry. You wrote a piece about him. So you have a little bit of insight to where he's at and where the Raptors are at. You know, Barrett has shown some flashes this season. He had a really good start shooting the ball. And obviously that was a big game. And the Raptors are showing a lot of faith in him. And, you know, one of the reasons why you may not want Wiggins is your small forward is Barrett going forward, right?
And that's what the Raptors media guys, Doug and company and Grange, they were like bemoaning about that. I'm like, why would they take another forward? But I'm like, I don't know. But another thing is Masai really loved Quickly. I thought that was a brilliant get for him. And Quickly's had a really, didn't he have a pretty big game, like game two or three? To get those two young guys, in an odd way, this seems to be one of those trades that are helping both teams. And, you know, I talked to Bill Duffy, and he did say initially there was a shock. Like, RJ came up from a nap, and there was this shock that, wow.
Bill
I really
Duffy
got
is
tricked.
RJ's agent. Sorry,
his agent. Yeah. And then he was, like, really stunned at first that he got traded. But when the dust settled, he was like, oh, man, I'm going home. And this is a kid who used to be in that locker room. And Brian and Kevin, he made me feel old because he was talking about, man, I used to love a young DeRozan. That was like my favorite player was a young DeRozan. I'm like, DeRozan's still young to me. And he likes
Sonny Weaves. You were expecting Vince Carter.
Like no Vince Carter, no Chris Bosh, no Marcus Camby, no David Stoudemire.
Right, David.
I'm like, he was born in 2000. So, like, those the guys I just mentioned didn't even exist to him. But he's like excited about going to Osmo's Mediterranean restaurant now and Tim Hortons, which we need Tim Hortons in the West Coast, hidden coffee gym, right? But I think he's really excited to be back. And I think it's great for not only Toronto, but for Canada to have, I think the first time they've had, he's like the eighth guy from Toronto to wear a Raptors uniform, but this is the first like guy that's kind of a star, right? That could have a big game. That could have a lot of big games and can sell a lot of jerseys. And I think he's going to make a lot of endorsement money in Canada as well. I know some of the other players have, and you know, and he. I think he's going to clean up there. So I think ultimately it was a really, really great move for Masai. Do they need two Toronto guys? Wiggins, like, how do you play Wiggins? Do you go small? You know, Pelton might be right. Chris Paul, Moody, Kuminga trade might be the better move for him.
And then I think Indiana is a team that also I think would get in there on
Wiggins.
Siakam.
Yeah.
I think. So, but you know, you're worried a little bit about whether he'd resign. Although, looking at the future of Indiana, I would recommend it if they're willing to pay. So.
And then I know Masai, from what I can gather, I don't think he just showed you he's not scared to make a trade. It's not like he's waiting for the buzzer to make a trade.
Right. I think
so
most
I think if there was a good move right now,
yeah.
I don't think he's doing any gamesmanship. I think if there was a good move for Siakam right now, he would do it.
Yeah, I think in the past that's been the case with Masai, especially.
Yeah.
But I think after they made this move, I think there is a belief in the league that he will. There's a good chance that Siakam gets traded. I think the bar is going to be high. I don't think they're dumping him. I mean, they haven't ruled out. I mean, they're kind of in this little nether region between those awful teams in the East and the play-in teams. Like they're not going to be bad enough to go all the way down with like Charlotte or Washington.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say they're in with the play-in teams. They're a half game back at Brooklyn, one back at Chicago. So
right. Well, Brooklyn has come backwards. They've come racing back recently. So I'm not saying they should chase that, but that is something to pay attention to.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, barrel-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. All right, the other big development that we had since we last talked was Ja Morant needing surgery on a torn labrum and he'd be out for the year. Only played 9 games. A loss.
Glad I ran my Marcus Smart story. I was sitting on it too. I'm glad I ran that last week.
Man, it was surprising. He like hurt his shoulder in practice, and I think they got a precautionary MRI, and that's why you get it. So when they found out it was torn, I don't think anybody thought it was torn. I don't think he thought it was torn. It's possible that it was a pre-existing thing that he didn't know, and this injury exacerbated it. Only he knows how his shoulder was feeling before. I would just say, like, it's very unfortunate and sort of follows the way this season's gone for Memphis, not having Steven Adams, not having Brandon Clark, having other injuries, and so it's kind of a lost year. I would just say that for the last 3 years now, you look, Memphis has finished twice, finished second twice. The last 2 years, they were second in the West. So they had a 2 seed back-to-back years. And then this year, 3-year run from a team in a small market. And they have 1 playoff series victory to show for all that. And
a lot of trash talking to show for it, too.
Right. It's just very disappointing teams don't get 8-year windows typically. Okay. Every now and then it happens. And then, you know, the good side of it is that their core players are young. Ja's young, Desmond Bain is young, Jaren Jackson's, you know, just maybe entering his prime.
They looked good last year into all that Ja situation.
Man, they were awesome.
Like I'm real curious what they could have been. We'll never know, but
and I mean I don't want to go so far as to say last year was lost, but you know, they said we're fine in the West for a reason. They would have been wrong. I think Denver's winning no matter what. But
yeah. They could have been in the West Finals with them if things
yeah.
We're right. That was, you know, very possible.
So
we'll never know.
It's not great. I mean, I know Woj was on TV saying today, you know, the bright side of this is they can get a, you know, they can have like a little gap year here because they're not making the playoffs. I mean, I wouldn't advise. I mean, like, I would to tell Brandon Clarke, I mean, keep working out, but don't worry about coming back and all that stuff. But
I mean, in this NBA draft, like top five is interesting. Like, I think they'll get a, it's not the best draft in the world,
you
but
could say that again. I mean, Gavoni. Look, executive. There's an executive that I who's been around a long time, and he always says to me, "You don't have to nail the draft. You have to nail your pick," which is a way of saying, you know, there's a good player everywhere. You just got to nail your pick. But the Grizz. I mean, you know, you can if you want to feel better about yourself as a Grizzlies fan, you can say, okay, we're going to keep our lottery pick, and we'll and have a shot at getting somebody. But they're going to be in the sort of the middle of the lottery. You know, at least in odds. I mean, obviously they could get lucky, but they're not getting down there to San Antonio,
you don't think so? There's a lot of basketball left.
Detroit,
I don't know how many
Charlotte.
teams though those te wins those teams have left.
What is their record right now?
They've got, I think, 19, 16 wins,
They're 13.
13 wins.
Yeah. League wise, they got the
They're
sixth worst
sixth right
record.
now. Yeah.
Okay. So,
Yeah.
how many of those teams that are in the top
Yeah,
five?
you ain't catching Detroit.
Yeah. Well, San Antonio and Washington are right there, buddy.
You don't think San Antonio's going to get better? Not
They're playing
seven wins.
Victor 24 minutes a game.
Yeah.
So,
And it's not like
Yeah.
Memphis is going to have nothing there. I mean, they part of the reason that they started as poorly as they did is because it wasn't just Ja and Steven Adams and Brandon Clarke, all of whom are now out for the season. It was also Luke Kennard missing time and Marcus Smart and all the, some of those guys will probably get shut down, at some point, we'd imagine. But I think they'll win enough that I don't think they're going to get into that like bottom three or four.
Right. So I'm just saying,
But with
like,
the lottery odds being what they are, if you're sixth going into the lottery, like you have a realistic chance at getting the number one pick. That's
yeah,
very
I mean,
plausible.
and that would be big. And especially if, I mean, they wouldn't have to keep it, they could trade it too, potentially.
Yeah.
Spears, I mean, I don't, you know, it just happened. I think they're just figuring out. I haven't heard anything actionable. I mean, I think they'd listen if somebody came for Kennard. I'd be surprised if they wanted to trade Marcus Smart. That's a guy that they brought in
Yeah.
for a reason. I don't like the idea that they're going to
You
all of a
know,
sudden.
I wonder, does he want to be traded?
Well, that's a different conversation.
Now that you see what it is, I mean, it seemed like he was really excited about playing with Ja from
Oh, yeah.
talking to him and helping Ja along. But he's not long in the tooth, but the tooth is growing,
The
right?
window is rattling and the tooth is
Yeah,
gone.
and but the thing is, if you're Memphis right now, you should listen, right? You certainly should listen if somebody wants him.
I mean, the challenge for them is going to be, you're probably not recouping the two first round picks that you gave up for him
Yeah.
at this point.
I mean, I just think they're going to try to start next year with Steven Adams back, with Ja back, with Brandon Clarke back.
Yeah.
I mean, if they can get a deal that they like, but I don't think that they're like, you know.
Yeah. What Ron Holland or Alex Saar new to the Memphis.
Now,
I don't.
the one thing they could look at is, like they're going to the luxury tax next year. That's why Kennard for them functions isn't expiring. He's got his a team option for 24, 25 that they're, probably going to have to decline to manage that tax bill. So,
Yeah.
yeah, somewhat you send him somewhere else, it's possible they could even pick that up because,
Lot of
they wouldn't
teams can use
necessarily have the
shooting.
same issues.
Yeah.
Lot of teams.
He's just his knee is problematic though. You're worried about his knee.
If I trade Marcus Smart for somebody who makes $10 million next year and an expiring $10 million contract and some sort of a draft pick, like that could be the kind of deal that might split the baby a little bit there.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. A little bit ago, Spears, you mentioned whether the Warriors would consider do something at the deadline. I want to talk real quick about the Cavs. The Cavs have won 7 of their last 10 games since Darius Garland and Evan Mobley went out. They've had a very interesting mid-season little makeover. Donovan Mitchell missed some of those games too. He had an illness. He missed 4 games. And the Cavs, I will just say this before I talk about them, they have gotten a little bit fat on some easy games. They played the last 3 games, for example. They played the Wizards twice and the Spurs. Having said that, Jared Allen is putting up all-star numbers. He's averaging like 22 and 16.
Putting up USA basketball, he needs to be on Olympic team numbers.
That's a great point. Not only that, he's averaging 6 assists a game. Because what's happening is that the Cavs, without Evan Mobley in, have been playing stretch fours, namely Dean Wade and George Niang. Neither of guys who are going to be in the All-Star game themselves. But what's happened is the Cavs have gone from a bottom 5 or 6 offense. The last 10 games, they've been, I believe, number 4 or 5 overall offense in the league. They've gone from being in the bottom 6 or 7 in number of three-pointers made per game, and I think the bottom 10 in three-pointers attempted per game, to number 1. In the last 10 games coming into tonight, in Tuesday night, Cavs lead the league in three-pointers attempted. And their assist ratio, now, Pelton, you can educate me about whether I'm looking at the best stat, but their assist ratio has gone from bottom half of the league to top 5 in the league over these last 10 games because – functionally, what is happening is they've taken Mobley out, who's not a floor spacer, and replaced him with floor spacers. And they've taken out Garland, who's more of a dribbler. Not that he's a ball hog, but he's a dribbler. And they've replaced him with spot-up shooters more often, particularly Sam Merrill, who's come out of the G League and is hitting 4 or 5 threes a night for the Cavs. And next thing you know, their offense goes flying up. Their passing goes flying up. Their scoring goes flying up. Their three-point shooting attempts go flying up. And they look like a completely different team. And Donovan's playing well, but they don't need Donovan to score 38 points to win. And all of a sudden, Jared Allen's numbers explode. And so while this is an interesting little story, as they sort of, you know, and their next game is Thursday in Paris. They're playing the Nets. That's another, I think the Nets have lost 7 of 8 or 8 of 9 or something like that. And who knows what's going to happen in Paris. But they're, you know, and that's not a tough game. They've got 3 games with the Bucks coming up, I think, before the end of the month or before they've started right there at the start of February. Their schedule is going to toughen. They are 14-3 against teams with losing records, so they're getting a little bit – they're feasting on the weaker teams. But I think the big thing here, Pelton, is what does this tell you about the Cavs and what they should consider about their roster now that they're flourishing once they're not playing 2 non-shooting bigs and they're not playing 2, you know – heavy ball dominant guards, even if those guys who are out are really good players.
Yeah, I mean, I think it validates everything that you and the Timbs in particular talked about with this team early in the season and how, you know, as awesome a defensive player as Evan Mobley is, his inability to develop 3-point range has held them back offensively. You know, that it's a testament to the value of spacing because it makes life so much easier for Jared Allen as a role man in the pick and roll. You know, not quite 6 assists per game, but 4 assists over the last 11 and 5 assists per game, I think, since Mitchell's been back. So,
okay, like, maybe the number went down a little bit before the time I checked, but it's still 4 or 5 assists for the Cavs center. Is, you know, he ain't Jokic.
Exactly. No, it's shocking. And, you know, 19.4 points per game over the last 11. The Sam Merrill piece of it was something that I didn't realize until I looked this up.
I didn't think they're 14th man.
Well, like Craig Porter Jr. is kind of nationally, I think, gotten a lot of the shine as the guy who's been stepping up for them. And he's been hugely important giving them another ball handler because we saw Ricky Rubio's retirement become official earlier or last week, along with his buyout from the Cavs. But, you know, it's not just that they have Darius Garland out. It's not just that Ricky Rubio hasn't played this season. Also, Ty Jerome, who's the guy they thought was going to step in while Rubio was out of the lineup, has missed like 30 some games with an ankle sprain.
Malicious ankle injury that hasn't healed, and I don't know what his prognosis is. He's basically been out the whole year.
So yeah, so Porter has been hugely important in terms of ball handling, but Merrill, yeah, in the last 11 games, again, this stretch where Garland has been out of the lineup, he is top 10 in the NBA in threes per game, playing 20 minutes a game off the bench. And it's not hugely fluky three-point accuracy. He's hitting 44%. He's a 41% career shooter. He shot 43% when he was down in the G League. Like, this is what this guy does. The volume is what's been amazing. And the team that it kind of reminds me of, I would say, in a lot of ways, is what Miami has done over stretches of the last few years. Not last year's regular season, when for whatever reason they couldn't make any threes, but there's sort of a cumulative effect, or, you know, there's a bonus. It's exponential when you put Max Strus out there, who's firing threes at a high rate, you know, before and after this stretch, and put Merrill out there with him, and Niang and Wade. Like, all of those guys are amplifying each other and really supercharging this Cleveland offense. I mean, there's obviously like a ceiling on how good you can be if you're playing those guys as much as they are right now. And, you know, I don't know how well that works in the playoffs necessarily, but it's like, you know, when Miami has had Duncan Robinson and Strus out there flying around shooting threes and that sort of thing, and has survived a lot of injuries that way. So look, even with the schedule, which they face the easiest set of opponents in the league, that 11 games, they're still the sixth best team in the East over that stretch when you adjust for that. And when Mitchell first went down, or when Garland and Mobley first went down, I think a lot of us jumped to the idea of a Donovan Mitchell trade, because the idea was this season was going to be lost for Cleveland. They weren't going to have that opportunity at home court in the first round, or a deep playoff run that we thought was possible coming into the season. Well, guess what? Right now, we have a West-style logjam in the East, where the Cavs are one of five teams tied for fourth place in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, if they can sustain anything like this when they get Mobley and Garland back, then, you know, they very much are in the running for home court in the first round once again.
So the key thing with Spears is, what do? Do you just help those guys get healthy and bring them back? I mean, or do you entertain some?
Well, first of all, I don't know what gum you're chewing on, but is that Hubba Bubba or something? what are you chewing on, man?
Am I distracting you? I'm sorry.
Are
you?
Oh, no, man, I like, he's been killing this gum. This gum might be good.
It's the same gum Ryan Gosling had during the Golden Globes the other night.
When you got this look, like, man, this cinnamon I got is outstanding. Like, I don't know what you got, but go ahead. Shout out to JB Bickerstaff too.
Absolutely. He was embattled earlier, and he's just coached. He's just kept coaching.
Yeah. And you know what? I think the guys that are sitting, the guys that have been away, and you watch this, and you watch how they're succeeding without you. And if you're JB, you hope that they come back and they adjust to what they're seeing and the success that the team is having, and not make it about you, but make it about continuing what this team is doing. And I hope such is the case.
Yeah, they're not going to be back till after the deadline. So I think what's most likely to happen is that the Cavs hold firm and just see how they get reintegrated. But it is a lot of food for thought going forward. There's a lot of teams. I understand a lot, but if Jared Allen was made available, they would get offers. Robust.
I'm a
offers.
Fan, man. I like that dude. Yeah, I told you that before.
Bontemps makes fun of me because I talk about how important he is. Because like every time he goes out, the Cavs lose, and so Bontemps
is very important.
Says
there's more to this game than scoring.
Right. I don't think they can trade Jared Allen, but at the same time, how can you consider trading Mobley? But at the same time, how can you look at this and say bring them back together? I don't know how you do it. And that's not a mid-season decision, but
yeah,
it's something that they got.
I think that's more of off season, right?
Probably.
Like, let's see how this goes. Let's see if they figure it out.
Probably, you know. But you're saying we'll figure it out with the Donovan Mitchell thing hanging out there.
Yeah.
You know, like at the end of the season, Donovan's got to want to extend. Otherwise, you know, maybe it works itself out. Maybe you see how Donovan feels about it. And if he doesn't want to extend, then you look to retrofit. But I will say something interesting that they did with Rubio. So Rubio obviously retired and really put out a upsetting statement where he made a reference to something that happened over the summer. He didn't spell it out, but it sounds like he went to a very, very dark place. So you feel bad about that. And But he was owed $7 million for the rest of this season, the balance of this season, and the next season. And something that Bobby Marks was telling me, obviously, if you get hurt in the NBA, and you have a guaranteed contract, like if you blow out your knee, you're protected. You can't not get paid if you have an injured knee. Ricky didn't show up to camp. He didn't report to work. Well, Ricky, in his contract, not everybody has this, but Ricky has mental health coverage in his contract. So if he was unable
Really?
to play due to mental health, he still gets paid and has gotten paid. Now, obviously, one like the Cavs were trying to hold money from him. Having said that, the Cavs were $700,000 from the tax line. They had $3.5 million left on their mid-level exception. It's not that they wouldn't spend into the tax, but ideally, in today's day and age, if you don't have to go into the tax, you don't. And so this deal, Ricky took half the money. He took basically half what was left, took like 3.5 or 3.6. Now the Cavs have like 3 million or $3.5 million left under the tax, plus they have $3 million, $3.5 million in mid-level exception, which they can sign Craig Porter, who's on a two-way contract. They can upgrade him and give him a multi-year contract if they want. They could also sign maybe a buyout guy or whatever. So that was an interesting little
They
piece
got
of.
two roster spots, so they can promote Porter now and still have a roster spot for
Right,
a
but they
buyout.
haven't promoted Porter yet. But that was an interesting little move that could be interesting later on with a team that's in contention. Okay, thank you guys for coming on Hoop Collective. Thank you, Spears, for rushing over across the Bay Bridge and talking to us about Draymond.
That's
Thank
it.
you.
We're gone.
We're gone, buddy.
You
You
got
got
another
something
topic?
else?
Oh
Got
man,
something
I
else?
was enjoying myself.
We always leave them, like James Brown said, always leave them
Hey,
wanting more, Spears.
yeah.
There's got to be more James Brown played in NBA arenas. We
Yeah, I agree.
got to have
I would say, Wendy, next live show, bring a cape.
it.
Wendy, I'll tell you this real quick. This is a true story. I was one of a D one of a few DJs at a 60th birthday party.
Recently?
Michael Eaves was there, so I have
Okay.
proof.
Okay.
And I was the second to last DJ tonight, and I
How
had
many
to
DJs are
remember
there?
there was four,
Okay.
and I had to remember. It was a lesson to be learned because the crowd was just 60. It was a 60-year-old's birthday party, right? And the last song I played was James Brown, "Papa Don't Take No Mess." No, the Big Payback,
Oh,
right?
classic song. Classic song.
And I was like amazed, like how excited they got over this song. And then I had to remember they're in their 60s. It's like a
James
60-year-old birthday
Brown
party.
is underrated. I said it. James Brown is underrated. What's your DJ name?
Still working on it.
DJ's still working on
Yeah, no,
it.
I kind of like question mark.
Just the symbol, like Prince, or
Just
like.
the symbol, baby.
All
He like, what
right.
the hell is he doing? You got a
That's tough
question mark every
SEO.
time he's out there DJing.
Thank you to DJ Question Mark. Thank you to DJ Machine. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. We'll be back talking to you with the Tim later this week.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.